Hey guys, this is Rose, and if you're listening to this, you found the Rose Quinn Podcast.
This is the Rose Quinn Podcast.
Treasure rejection.
The community is so great.
It's going to be like my breakout story.
That I realized I really didn't like where my life was.
Yeah.
And I was going to pursue my dreams.
The Rose Quinn Podcast.
This is the Rose Quinn Podcast. Hey guys, this is episode 12 of the Rose Quinn Podcast. And I have an amazing guest for you guys today, Dimitra Brodsky, who is the author of Dive Smack. It comes out June 19th, which is just a few days away, and it's an incredible book. It's her debut novel, and I'm serious. You guys have to read it. I was lucky enough to get an ARC of it. She sent it to me and signed it, and over the last few months, I've been communicating with her about it, and we did our interview, and she's just such a great writer friend to have and has been so awesome to get to know and to have in my little writer world. She's so amazing. So let me tell you a little bit about Dive Smack. It was selected to be a 2018 Junior Library Guild selection, which is amazing and so happy for her. Let me read you the blurb. All right. Theo Mackey only remembers one thing for certain about the fire that destroyed his home. He lit the match. Sure, it was an accident, but the blaze killed his mom and set his dad on a path to self-destruction. Everything else about that fateful night is full of gaping holes in Theo's mind, for good reason. Maybe it's better that way. As captain of the Ellis Hollow diving team with straight A's and solid friends, he's only one semester away from securing a scholarship and leaving his past behind. But when a family history project gets assigned at school, new memories come rushing to the surface. Memories that make him question what he really knows about his family, the night of the fire, and if he can trust anyone, including himself. Doesn't that just make you want to devour the book right now? I'm sure all of you guys already have it in your Amazon checkout basket to pre-order or on your to-be-read list, but if you don't for some crazy reason, please make sure to go put it on there right now. And make sure to follow Dimitra on social media. Her handle on Twitter is just her name, her first and last name all spelled out, no spaces or extra characters, because you want to make sure that you read Dive Smack, but also read the other books that she's got working for us. All right, I won't delay us any longer. You guys are going to love getting to know Dimitra, and you're going to be obsessed with her and Dive Smack after this interview. So here we go. Debut novel Dive Smack comes out June 19th. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey with this book? I remember in a conversation we had, you told me it was a really long, crazy journey. So I'm super interested to hear what you have, you know, the background of it.
Yeah, when I got this question for you, tell us about your journey with this book. I had to go back and look at some, you know, emails and docs and dates. And I wrote the first draft of Dive Smack. I started writing the first draft of Dive Smack in December of 2011, which sounds like a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I had written a Greek mythology first. That was my first novel ever. And I didn't find an agent for that book, but I did get encouraging feedback from editors. And I actually just was listening to a podcast from earlier in your set,
mm-hmm.
where you talked about query letters, and I was really feeling a lot of the things that you said. And so, yeah, armed with some of that feedback and those critiques, I set out to learn more about writing so that I could strengthen what my weaknesses were at that time. And I was following like a lot of blogs run by agents, and you know, Jenny Bent had a really good blog,
mm-hmm.
or she probably still does, has a really good blog for writers. And Andrea Brown would post some stuff. Some of their agents would post some stuff, and so I wrote that draft. And then I applied to go to the Big Sur Writing Workshop. That's run by the Andrea Brown Literary Agency.
Oh wow, that's awesome!
Yeah, that was really fun. And I workshopped the early pages from that book there with Jennifer Loughran, who's one of their agents. She's
mm-hmm.
amazing. And I went back home and with her feedback and everything I learned, and I just revised the whole book. And so I finished writing the first draft of Dive Smack completely, like a whole revised, the whole thing was done on in April of 2012. So, but between, you know, April 2012 and now, I've probably written 20 drafts of it, and have easily over 100 rejections from agents and editors combined.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
So yeah, that was a crazy, it's a crazy long process.
Yeah. I don't know if you've gathered this from past podcasts, because I feel like I say this all the time, but I'm not a patient person. So it always...
I'm not either. That's going to come up as my weakness later. We'll talk about that for sure.
That is crazy. But I'm so glad that you got it, got an agent, and got, you know, are getting it published, because it really is such an awesome story. What was your inspiration for it? Like, where did that come from? Or do you remember?
You know, I just remember, I have, my daughter and I are both ADHD, and she has also hypothyroidism. I don't know if you know anything about that, but
yeah.
So it can, like, come across as ADHD if you don't, you know, some of the symptoms for hypothyroidism in children will come across as ADHD symptoms, and sometimes they're misdiagnosed, and so she wasn't, because I was... you know, on the internet, on WebMD,
yes.
And I was like, maybe she has diabetes, or, so we ended up finding out that she was hypothyroid, but also ADHD, and I was thinking about these medications that I was taking, and that she was taking, and, you know, they're just these capsules, you can open them up and pour out what's inside and fill them with anything, really, and it's dangerous. If you had somebody who, you know, who wasn't, on the up and up, you could get this drug, and
yeah,
you know, what would it do? What could it do? And so I started to just think about the more nefarious side of prescription drugs. And I had a friend that was a springboard diver in the 1992 Olympics, and I was like, just thinking about her. She had come up on my Facebook page, and I just looked at my family one day, and I was like, I'm going to write a book about a boy who, you know, is a springboard diver, who's taking these, you know, ADHD drugs, but he had, in the earlier version, he actually had, he was supposed to be taking Synthroid for hypothyroidism, and that got cut, but it just kind of started like that, with like, you know, what are these drugs? Why are we taking them? Like, what if something went wrong with them? And it just spiraled from there.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's just, I mean, it's so interesting how your inspiration can come from everyday, real life things like that. And, you know, it created this world. That's super awesome.
Something so mundane.
Yeah.
You know, just a vitamin or,
yeah, medication.
Or, you know, a hairbrush or whatever it is, whatever the thing is that sets you off, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy. So with your querying process, you know, you said you got over 100 rejections, which, you know, we all feel that rejection pain, I think.
Yep.
We all know how it feels. But how did you approach querying? As far as, I know you said you followed a lot of blogs about that, but, you know, kind of what was your process and what do you think helped you during that time?
Well, I was definitely following blogs. I was looking at the acknowledgments in the books that I liked to see who the agents were. Literary Rambles, you know that website? I would read agent interviews on Literary Rambles. And there's this, there used to be an agent at Andrea Brown. I'm not sure if she's there anymore, but her name was Mary Cole. And she had written a blog post that was about, it was about writing a query. And she broke it down really simply. It was, and I wrote it down for you tonight just
that's
so I could
perfect
tell you. So it was,
yes,
you know, who is your character? What is the strange thing going on in their life that throws them off their equilibrium and launches the story? What or who do they want most in the world? What or who is their main character's ally? Who or what is in the way of getting them what they want most in the world, their obstacle, and what is at stake if they don't get what they want? And when I started to follow, you know, that setup,
yeah,
that outline, my queries got much tighter.
Yeah.
So
I like the way that's
worded.
For them.
They are somewhere. I had put them into a Word doc, which I'm happy to send you. But you can search still for, like, Mary Cole query, and it should come up on different sites. That was the thing that really changed how I was querying, how I was writing the query and writing basically a synopsis for my story.
Yeah. I like that there's one extra one in there that you don't normally see. And I like how it's who or what, because on most of the query websites, it's, I think, just 3 points. And I think that there was 4 in the one that you read. I like that it's a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy to send it to you. It's a really good one.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. You
know, yeah. The other thing for that is it just, you know, sometimes who's the website? It's like the Snark, one of the Snark websites for querying, Agent Snark.
Is it the Query Shark?
No, there's one that's just the Snark one, and it's actually really funny, but it'll say, it's like, you know, just like be polite when you write a query letter. You know, spell the name of the agent correctly. You know, if the agent's name is Jane Jones, make sure the greeting isn't Dear Mr. Jones.
Right.
Just those little things, like, you know who you're querying and what they like. And, you know, go to Manuscript Wishlist on Twitter and see what people like. And actually, that's how I found my agent. So.
Oh, it was Manuscript Wishlist?
Yeah, I didn't actually do it online, but I saw that he was looking for thrillers, and he was, he and someone else, and that's who I had queried at the time.
That's awesome. I think that it's so great that in our day and age we have that technology where they can really just put out there exactly what they're looking for.
I was like, I think about Stephen King, you know, sending out his stories and his letters and...
Oh my gosh, letters. I can't imagine sending query letters, like, in the mail. I know some agents, well, who knows, but I'm like, the ones who do requests that are far and few between, but I can't imagine doing them all like that.
Yeah, no way.
No.
I had given up on this book entirely. I had gotten so many rejections that I put it aside, and I wrote something else. I wrote an adult fiction that I'm waiting to send to my agent, and I was like, I'm done. I'm just going to write something.
No,
I just need a break. I needed a break. I needed a break. I needed a break, and I said, I'm just going to write a book that's just for me, and I cannot tell you how liberating that is to not, you know, be writing, you know, for something for someone specific. It's just, I'm just going to write a book that I love. That's all for me. And that is so freeing. I think if we take the pressure off ourselves and we just write the story that we love, the writing is much, much better, much stronger.
Yeah. You're not focusing on, oh, I want this to be the next great American novel. You're just being like, I love to write, and I'm going to write something that I enjoy. And it comes more naturally,
for sure. And I'm competitive, you know, by nature. So I'm a Leo, so I'm a very competitive person. And so one of my crit partners, whose name is Robin Rule, she wrote a book called My Kind of Crazy from Sourcebook Fire. It's a great book, and we have kind of a similar voice. And she had started querying and encouraged me to query again. And I was like, you know, I'm done with this book. And she's like, no, you're not. And I'm like, no, you know, Robin, I'm done. And she's like, no, you're not. Just send out 5. That's what she said to me. And yeah, and so I wrote a new query and I sent out 5, and I actually started getting responses. And so in some ways, I think timing is an important component of that as well.
It really is. I've always said that to people. I've had quite a few friends and family members who are like, so what do you have to do to get published? I'm like, there's so many things. But I'm like, you really kind of have to catch an agent on the right day at the right time in the right month when they're looking for what you're sending them. And it's a little bit of like chance, I feel like, at some level.
You can see it on Twitter. You know, it'll be a new TV show comes out, and then all of a sudden everyone's like, someone send me a YA, you know, version of, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever TV show du jour is on at the time. And it's not really how I write. I just, ideas come to me, and if I really want to write them, I'll write them. But, you can definitely see the trends. If you're chasing trends.
Oh, that you're far behind.
You're behind the eight ball. It's too late. It's too late.
Yeah. You can't be ahead of a trend that's currently happening.
Right. Exactly.
Well, what would you say is your your number one tip for writers who are in the Korean process right now?
Try not to check your email every 5 minutes.
That's
and I'm saying this as a writer, as an author who can't stop checking. I mean, I have a book out on sub actually, and you know, I don't even have time to think about that book, which is kind of a good thing because I'm working on something else. And so try to stay busy writing your next book and let that one go, really, because you have no control over it, right? We try to control these things, and which just, it's like you said, it's timing and it's chance and it's taste.
Yep.
It's all subjective. And the best thing you can do, as hard as it is, even if it's a short story, a poem, you know, an outline, make a Pinterest board for something, whatever it is, anything to keep you from obsessing every time the email, every time you refresh your email. Yeah.
Yes. And it's hard too, because now our, you know, your email's on your phone. It's so easy to check all the time. I'm bad at that for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know a single writer who doesn't say, I wrote 4 pages and I did great. And then I just got up to get a water and all of a sudden, you know, 45 minutes had passed and I had checked Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and I answered an email. But the problem with that is that it can take 30 minutes just to get back into the story.
Oh, me too.
Right. I love that Stephen King quote, and I'm paraphrasing, but he says something like, you know, sit down and write and don't even get up to go to the bathroom unless you have to go. And even then, like, try not to.
Yeah.
And because I think we do just lose that flow, that voice.
Yep.
So
I always set myself a timer on my phone. I like turn my phone into airplane mode. And I set myself a timer for like 45 minutes or an hour. So most of the time it's like 45 minutes because an hour sometimes is too long for me. But then I don't look at my phone. I don't do anything else until that timer goes off. And then I can give myself a break and check Twitter or whatever. But it is nice because then I stay in the story. Sometimes I make the mistake of watching TV when I write. And I can only watch certain shows when I write.
Oh, that's funny.
Because I've seen them so many times that I don't have to pay attention. But the other day I was watching some cooking show while I was trying to write, like a cooking competition show. And it didn't work out very well for me because I kept looking up. I'm like, okay, what's going on now? And then I'm like,
you're like, I feel hungry right now. Right?
And then I'm like, wait.
Maybe I'll get a snack and get back to this in a minute.
Exactly. Right. It was not very productive. So
yeah, I can't do that.
No.
I need total silence.
I can't do total silence. It definitely, I don't know why, but I like to have something on in the background that I can just ignore.
Yeah, there's a really great, do you know Moby, the musician Moby?
Yes.
He made an album that's all instrumental. And so I put that on sometimes. I think it's like kind of sleepy music, but I'm actually trying to pull it up right now to see what the name of the album is. But I like that, you know, instrumental. I do, sometimes I'll do soundtracks for movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are great. Like, I don't know how you say his name. I don't know if it's Desplat, but Alexander Desplat. And oh, here it is. It's Moby Long Ambience.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah. So the songs are each about, some are 20 minutes long, some are 35 minutes long, but there's, you know, 10 or 12 of them on there. So it's hours of this really nice ambient music.
Well, that's nice. I should try it because maybe I'd be more productive if I wasn't watching The Office in the background.
Yeah, because sometimes I'll put on a soundtrack. It'll be like something from Sherlock. It's like, man, it's like, it's too exciting. Like, and I'm like, okay, this is the wrong scene for that kind of music. But like, it's funny. Or the Harry Potter soundtrack. I know the movie's so to listen to it.
Harry Potter, I just get distracted. I'd be like, oh, this is what's happening. Well, this music is going on right now. I couldn't do
Me too. I can't. It's too much love. It's too much love.
I know.
Too much love for the HP.
I know. I love HP so much. I remember the last book, because they used to have the parties at the bookstores, you know, for the book releases. And I went there for the last book, stood in line at midnight and read that book. I like timed myself. I read it in like 23 hours. I was pretty proud of myself.
That's amazing.
So I just love them so much. Okay. Back to questions, though. So this is a two-parter. What's the hardest part of writing for you, and what's the hardest part of being an author?
Well, you know, I just gave advice where I said to be patient and not check your email, but I am fairly impatient with myself. I set a very high standard for myself. So one of the problems I have is that when I'm drafting, I don't want to do anything else.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, I see life sometimes as getting in the way, as an inconvenience, to the writing, but really stepping away from my manuscript or whatever, you know, my WIP is that those are the moments that fuel my imagination. They're so necessary. I can't write in a vacuum. I don't think anyone can. We have to live life and have new experiences and meet new people and taste something that's exotic to our palates,
for sure.
Or else how do we put that on the page? You know, we can't do that. And so that's definitely the hardest thing for me, is to remind myself. I have another friend named Deb Driza, who's a writer. She wrote the Mila 2.0 trilogy, and she still says to me, you know, to this day, like, you have to take a break.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, you have to take breaks. You'll be a better writer if you take breaks, and she's right about that.
I feel like sometimes it's contrary to what we think. We're like, oh, we just need to write and finish it and just write as much as we can. I struggle with that a lot, too, of, like, every, you know, moment I want to be writing. But you're so right. It is the moments away and the times we spend with family and friends and going out and doing things that give you the inspiration to go back and write better. Because I feel like sometimes if you write too long in a certain stretch of time, you can get yourself stuck, or you can get yourself, you know, feeling very unmotivated about your writing.
Oh, for sure. And there's plenty of time for that. Like for an aspiring author to put themselves, you know, nose to the grindstone like that, I feel like I understand it. Because I did it, mm-hmm. and I still do it. It's like, if I just keep working, I will get that agent. If I just work a little bit harder, I'm going to get that agent. But the time will come when you go on deadline and you have, you know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and you really can't do much else than work on the book. And so living life is so important.
Yeah.
It's so important.
Really important.
So that's the hardest part of writing for me. And the hardest part of being an author is looped into that. because I'm impatient with myself, and I can be a little bit of a control freak. Sometimes the industry doesn't move as quickly as I'd like.
Yeah.
I don't get a response as quickly as I like, or, you know, I won't get my edits done as quickly as I like, some of those things I don't have any control over. I can't control the pacing of the production of a book.
No.
And so when I wonder, like, why isn't this thing happening? You know, it can stir up this anxiety in me, and my overactive imagination goes crazy, but not in a good way. And I think that I need to just let things happen instead of imagining how the situation should be and just accept the situation for how it is.
That's definitely a hard thing to do, though. I totally understand.
Super.
Because I'm a little bit of a control freak. I feel like you're giving me a peek into my future someday of the struggles that I will have.
Well, I will tell you now, you should learn to meditate or take a minute to yourself. It's a walk is, you know, really important. You get stuck, you know, and then you're like, oh, I can't. But just you take that walk, and all of a sudden it just opens up everything in your mind, you know?
I love that advice. I will write it down so I remember it when I'm feeling the way you're feeling.
You can call me. You can call me and
I'll
say, I am freaking out. And I'll be like, we can't control everything.
Yep. Especially when there's so many parts and pieces, you know, that you don't have control over. Like you said, that would be really hard.
Yeah.
Ooh. Okay, so now the hard part is out of the way, sort of. So what's the best part about being a writer and being an author for you?
For me, it's having that, just that tiny spark of an idea, mm-hmm. and then the moment where it starts to turn into a whole world, yeah. like that, you know, getting lost inside my own head is fun for me. I've been an artist my whole adult life. I have a BFA from the Massachusetts College of Art, so I come from, you know, background of design and also, you know, painting and, you know, pen and ink drawing and those like long hours of putting one drop of something on yeah. a page or canvas and turning it into something. And writing is really very much like that. So I really just swapped the visual yeah. for the written word.
Yep.
And so that really is my favorite thing, is that I could see it, you know, I love Pinterest. I use it as a tool to yes. create vision boards for every novel that I'm working on. And so,
me too.
One picture can just, I'm like, why is that girl crying? What is that thing in the background? And I can just go from there.
I love that. Pinterest is the best for that because there's so many different things on there. But the vision boards really help me when I'm in the drafting process of giving myself a visual or helping me keep a mood. I feel like they really help.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. And what's the best part of being an author? Did you answer the same? Is it the same for both questions?
No.
Okay.
So the best part about being an author for me is interacting with readers.
Oh, yeah.
Hands down. Whether it's a teenager or a librarian or an incredible blogger like yourself who truly loves books and reading, that energy is so infectious. It's so reaffirming that maybe, just maybe, I'm doing the right thing with my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, not sitting in a cubicle, but I actually am in kind of a cubicle in my house right now. But
at least it's a cubicle in your own house, you know. It's your cubicle.
Yes, it is. It's basically, it's like a piece of a room with like a big curtain that has a thing across, you know, goes across the room. So yeah. I can just close it and otherwise I'd be too distracted.
I like that kind of cubicle though. And you have control over it, so it's fine.
Exactly. That's funny. I can control the view. I can control the view, but not the process of other things, no, for sure.
Which is fine. I think I have had the opportunity, you know, to connect with you and so many other great authors. And I just feel, it makes me sad because I've been an avid reader all my life, and I wish I had had that connection with readers when I was, you know, in middle school and high school, to be able to connect
me
with
too.
Them in such a immediate way. Like one of an author who I love, Mary Kubica. I don't know. Do you know who that is?
Yeah, I know. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I just on the off chance, I was like, oh, I like tweeted about her book and then messaged her. I'm like, she'll never see this. But then she responded, and I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, that's the best.
I was like, this is crazy. You know, I fangirled a little bit. But it's like we have such a direct connection, which, we didn't have 10 years ago. And it makes it, I feel like, even better for authors because you get such direct contact with your readers, not just in person at events or, you know, signings, but all the time.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
I love it.
Anytime anyone says, I loved your book, it's a fantastic feeling.
So exciting. And, I mean, I don't know why anyone would say anything different, so.
Oh, thank you.
So, with Dive Smack and your other writings, do you plan them out with an outline, or are you more of a pantser, or somewhere like a planter in between?
What do you think?
I think maybe an in between.
I am an in between. Okay. I am an in between. Yep. I call myself a plotter because I like to have an idea of how I want the book to end before I can start writing. I feel like if I don't know, I'm very visual. So like a visual for how I want things to go, mm-hmm. then it's like driving a car without a map.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work for me. I'm a GPS all the way. So yes. I start with a synopsis and a storyboard, but usually, you know, the best laid plans, right? So it takes takes on a life of its own, and that's kind of in that moment is where it becomes a hybrid of plotting and pantsing.
I love it. I think I just like to hear other people do it. I'm kind of the opposite. I'm more of a plotter, but I always never have an idea how it'll end. Which I probably should, but I figured
no,
out.
No, everyone does it the right way.
I know. It's sometimes I feel like I'm a little bit of like a driving a car without a map when I first get started, but then when I get to that moment when I realize what the ending is, that's kind of my favorite moment of writing. But
yeah.
I love that everybody does it so differently, and sometimes I feel like it takes a while to find what works for you, but I think it's always interesting to know, you know. Because sometimes people plan out super hardcore and then stick to their plans, which I'm like, I applaud you for doing that. Because whenever I plan something out, my characters take it in the opposite direction.
I think it might come from having a background in design and art direction.
Yeah.
So I'm so used to creating things for clients that, and they have, you know, really strong opinions about what they want.
Right.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
A lot of the time they're wrong, they just don't know it. And you know, your job is to convince them.
Yes.
You know, of the story that you're trying to tell for their product or I was an exhibition designed exhibits for a natural history museum. I was the director of exhibits for the Museum of the Earth in Ithaca, New York, and so
that's so cool.
You have to tell a story when you design exhibits, too, but you can't just, you still need to plan it.
Yeah.
You know, so how is the visitor to the museum going to walk through this space and experience the story about aminoids that you're trying to tell?
Wow.
So it comes from that.
Yeah, that's a very interesting background, too, that pulls into your writing. I love that.
It was a wild transition.
That is a wild transition.
Go from designing exhibits and, you know, with fossils to doing this. So
yeah, to writing, but you know, that's all right. So, have you, even when you were doing working at the museum and doing design work, did you write back then, or when did your love of writing start?
I was always kind of writing poems and little stories, but I remember wanting to be a writer from a very young age, like maybe 10, mm-hmm. 12 years old. I was, you know, is that when you read Judy Blume and Beverly Cleary? I think so.
Yeah, that's about right.
And I remember I remember going to the library. We didn't have to wear seatbelts back then, and so we would lay on the back seat in the car, and my parents would drive to like my aunt's house on the Cape or whatever, and I always had my nose buried in a book. But I saw authors as like these mythical beings, you know.
Yeah.
They weren't, like you said, there weren't anyone that I could interact with. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, I always thought it was amazing, like, wow, this person wrote this book, you know, this is so cool. But it wasn't until I lost my job in the recession in 2009 that I started to think about not writing poetry, even writing, you know, trying to write a novel. My daughter was reading Percy Jackson at the time.
Yeah.
The first Percy Jackson book. And I, she was just, I'm a first generation Greek American. And so she was like, Mom, this book, you know, it's so great. And you have to read it. You have to read it. And I was like, I was getting mad. You know, I was getting mad at Rick Riordan. I was like, who are you writing this Greek mythology? Give me that book. And so the first book I ever wrote was a Greek mythology.
Yeah.
And I went to the library and I took out every book, like as many books as I could carry.
Of course, yeah.
On how to write a book.
Yes.
You know? And so, and I really outlined that. So I was following these things. They were like, yeah, this is how you outline a book. You have to have this, and you have to have this, and you have to have that. And I still, to this day, love that book. I think I'm going to have to rewrite it from you know, front to back. But
still, please do that, because I'm sure it's great.
I love it. And I have a few friends that still are like, I still want to know what happens to blah, 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 and book two that was never written, you know? But so that's, honestly, it was Rick Riordan irritated me, and I had to write.
I love that.
That was it. I just had to do it. So I have a lot of respect for Rick Riordan.
Yeah, you have him to thank for your.
I really do.
Inspiration.
Yeah, I really do. Although I have other friends that say, you know, they read Twilight, said, I really want to write a book. And I just, same situation.
Yeah.
You know, which is crazy to me because there are people who will be like, oh, Twilight, whatever. Like, they won't admit to loving Twilight in its heyday. And I'm sorry, we all loved Twilight in its heyday.
All love Twilight in its heyday. I will remember, I do remember, and I will be honest, when I first started reading the first book, I, like, got through the first couple chapters, and I was like, ugh, I can't. But then I picked it up again, and I loved Twilight in the whole series, and I think what's great, and I've talked to other, you know, writers about this, is that series really made people feel like anyone could write a book. Anybody could come up with a story and do it, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think that there's a lot of people who probably did write a book after that, and who knows, maybe got it published and all of that, but we all loved Twilight. That's why they made it into movies, and it sold so many copies.
She changed everything about young adult literature.
She did.
I mean, she changed the way kids read and how, what they thought of books. I mean, she brought back this this fandom and this, you know, fervor, and I have a lot of respect for that, so...
For sure.
No.
Yeah. And she wrote another one, The Host, and I really enjoyed that book. The movie was not my favorite, but I remember reading that book and really enjoying that one too. So it's not, I think some people are hard on her and say that she doesn't have talent or that she's not a good writer, but I think that sort of thing comes when you're that successful and have that much, you know, success with books. But I think that you're right. She did change a lot, and she made it, she made a lot of kids read.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
It's great.
No complaining about that.
I still have my first editions here, and every once in a while I'll go through all my books and I'll donate a bunch to the library, and I can't part with them because she really did change everything. So let me ask you, Team Edward or Team Jacob?
I'm Team Jacob.
Me too.
Yeah. And I don't know, I think that maybe I'm too hard on Edward and I'm judging him too much as a...
Him and his sparkly skin.
Oh, his sparkly, cold skin. I was always Team Jacob, not just because Taylor Lautner was so beautiful, but I just feel like he was just more real and better for Bella.
Yeah, the underdog.
Yep, gotta root
for him. I'm a sucker for the underdog,
Me too. So bad. Oh, Twilight, good times. Well, so last question, and I love to know what everybody else is reading, even though I have so many things to read. But this last question is, what is your favorite book right now? And you can give me more than one answer if you can't choose.
Yeah, because it's such a hard question.
It's impossible, but I ask it anyway.
I don't actually have a favorite right now because they're all my favorites while I'm reading them.
True.
I'm obsessed. I get obsessed. And so... I'm a little bit of a book tramp in that way, but the last book or two, let me think, the last book I read where I put it down, actually the last two books I read where I put them down and said, like, yeah, that was great, you know, that's the kind of writer I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
They're not new.
That's exciting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're not new books.
I love that.
One of them is The End of Everything by Megan Abbott.
Oh, yeah, I haven't read that, but that's been on my list for a really long time.
Oh, it's so good.
Okay.
It's so, so good. And the other is Island of Lost Girls by Jennifer McMahon.
Ooh, I've never even heard that.
Yeah, it's great. They're both, both books have to do with how characters remember the past. And, you know, because memory is so subjective, because, you know, they go back and forth between childhood and present day. And they're great. They're both great.
Awesome.
I highly recommend both of them.
I love
it. They're two authors that I really love. I would say that right now I'm pretty obsessed with Megan Abbott, Jennifer McMahon, and Gillian Flynn. I'll read anything.
I love. Is it Jillian or Gillian? I never know. Jillian?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. It's probably Jillian, not Gillian.
Her name could be like Peanut Butter Flynn, and I would be like, yes, I'll take that novel.
I will read anything Peanut Butter Flynn writes.
Absolutely.
Or Ruth Ware.
Absolutely.
Ruth Ware, she's another one. Anything
She's, oh, I'll have to look at that. Yeah.
She's got a new one coming out that I'm like, oh my gosh, can it be out already?
They're making a Gillian Flynn. HBO is doing Sharp Objects.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, that's my favorite one.
I love that one. What was the one Charlize Theron was, she in Dark, was it, what's the
Dark Places?
Dark Places. But I never saw that movie. It didn't, I feel like it wasn't even in theaters.
It is such a great book that I think the first line of that book.
Oh my gosh.
It's like something like, I have a meanness in me, something as an organ. I don't remember the, like, the exact words. It was just
from line one,
I was like, yes.
Yeah. Yes. I know.
And so I also really like Tana French.
Oh, yes. I have one of her books on my in my to-be-read pile right now. I love her, too.
Is that, did you read In the Woods?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so good. Good. And then for YA, I love Stephanie Keen. Oh. And I'll read anything she writes.
I don't know that I've read anything she's ever written.
Oh, you should. Charm and Strange, okay. Delicate Monsters, Complicit, really great thriller writer.
What was her name again?
Which one? Oh, Complicit's really good, Charm and Strange,
okay,
and Delicate Monsters.
Okay, I will read
and
them.
And then, trying to think, for YA, oh, E. Lockhart.
Oh, yes, E. Lockhart.
And Jandy Nelson. I like Jandy Nelson. So there's so many. I just would love to take a whole month and just not talk to anybody.
And just
write,
read.
And read and write and read.
Yeah.
It would be the best.
It would be the best. I kind of have the best job where I get to get paid to kind of do those things. I get to get paid to sit in hotels and write on layovers.
I know, and travel.
Yes, it's exciting.
It is. It's really exciting. And I'm so impressed that you just decided. You were like, okay, I'm going to do this thing with my life. And, you know, it's amazing because I had to do the same thing. I had to, when I got, you know, laid off, I was still freelancing. I had done a whole, I had built a whole exhibit for Cymer, incorporated, but as a freelancer. But I could wallow in the fact that I'd lost my job like so many other people had lost their jobs. Or I could take the opportunity to freelance and try and reinvent myself and have the job that I kind of always wanted. That, you know, my family was like, go work in a bank because, you know, the banks will never close.
Right.
You know, it's just, is a very, like, daughter of immigrants mentality. Like, a bank is a good job and you should do that. And so, of course, I did, and I went to art school, which that's a whole other story. But, you know, and you kind of did the same thing. You're like, I'm gonna reinvent myself because I can't.
Yep. Why not? So, you know, I
why not?
And I feel super grateful too, because there's a lot of people who couldn't do this job that, you know, because our training was 6 weeks and you don't get paid for it and all these things. And it's like a lot of people can't do that. And so it's like, I'm just lucky that I had the ability to do it. And now I get to have a great career and be a writer and be published someday, and it'll be wonderful.
It is. It's going to all happen. It's going to be great.
Yes, it's going to be great. All right. Well, Demetra, thank you so much for chatting with me today. And everyone, remember that her novel, Dive Smack, comes out on June 19th.